Welcome to GoTo Gal, episode number 171. As always, I'm your host, Jacqueline Malone, and today we're talking about one of my favorite topics. Just kidding. This is so not one of my favorite topics, but we are talking about it with one of my favorite people, which does make it fun. And I don't know, for me, if you're like me, managing business finances, it sounds like, ooh, managing your, no, it's not fun for me. I don't know. It stresses me out. It used to stress me out a lot more. I've come a long way, but it still, I would be lying if I told you it didn't still stress me out. So we got to keep it real around here. But I will say one of the things that has helped me the most, because I'm one of those people that, I don't know, I used to joke like I can't math. And then, you know, my mindset has gotten better. I can math. I just don't really like to math, right? It makes me think about, I think I told this story on one of the episodes where I was talking about my journey with ADHD, but I always struggled with math in school. And I don't know, I always did enough homework or, you know, showed up enough where I was able to get a decent grade. But one year, I think it was my junior year, I got a 66 on the New York State Regents, which I was like a solid B+ student overall. So having like a D on my transcript that I was going to apply to college with was just horrifying. So I wasn't, even though it was technically passing, I'm like, okay, I can't let that stay there. That summer, my parents got a tutor for me and I met with her twice. And then I was able to retake the Regents. And after those two sessions, I took that same, obviously different, but same concept of a test that summer and got a 93. So for me, sometimes it's just having someone break things down in, you know, one-on-one or just at my own pace where I can be like, oh, that's how the puzzle pieces go together, right? And with math, once you get those concepts, you just keep applying them, right? So I've used that same strategy in my business when things start to get overwhelming or, you know, it's one of those up-leveling things, right? Because the more money you're managing, the more expenses you're managing, and it can almost prevent you from up-leveling because at a certain point, it's like, oh, there's a lot going on here, right? So hiring people to help me to understand it, to manage it, to whatever has been such a game changer for me. Now, I wanted to bring Melissa on today because maybe you're at a point where you're hiring people to help you with stuff like this. Maybe you're not. Maybe you don't even know some of the conversations you should be having or what things look like at different levels. I just think it's really important. I was going to say healthy. It's probably healthy too, but I think it's important for us as especially women entrepreneurs and don't talk about money enough. And not just, oh, I had a six-figure launch, but like, okay, but how are we managing this money? And what does that actually look like when we say that? So I wanted to bring Melissa Houston back. If you missed her, she was on the podcast last month talking about her journey of really scaling her business over the last year and a half, mainly through publicity. But I wanted to bring her back to actually talk about her area of expertise, which is managing your business finances, and have that kind of, I don't know, girl chat around. This is not a tutorial, right? But to really talk about what does that mean and what should we be doing and looking for and peel back some of those things that maybe you are not having these conversations in your own, I don't know, friendships, masterminds. I wanted to give you a chance to hear Melissa and I chat about it and hopefully answer some of those questions. And if not, give you enough to like, oh, I need to look more into that and go find the answer next. All right. That is today. We are talking all things business finance. Okay, so what does that actually mean, talking about business finances? Well, we're going to cover a lot in this conversation, but we're going to touch on, oh, let's see, what it looks like when you want to change your business model. Habits that are good to have in terms of managing your finances and your business, how you can make it fun, hidden costs, kind of a look behind some of these bigger launches you might be seeing, cash flow, paying yourself. We cover a lot. So before we get to it, though, I want to formally introduce you to Melissa. Melissa Houston is a CPA and business finance coach who has over 20 years of experience helping entrepreneurs with their business finances. Melissa teaches her signature CFO money method signature framework through group programs. Melissa is a regular contributor at Forbes.com and is the host of Think Like a CFO podcast. All right, let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Melissa. Melissa, I'm so excited to have you here today.
Oh, I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me, Jacqueline.
Yes, I know. Well, this is like your second interview in like 2 months. I mean, that's a record for speed of coming back as a guest, for sure.
Because I got lots to say.
Lots to say. Well, I have lots to ask you, I think is really the question here. Oh, but before we dive in to that, take us back in time to when you were growing up. What were you the go-to gal for back then?
You know what? I was thinking about that because I knew you were going to ask me that. And I was always the go-to gal for an honest opinion. And all my friends would come to me and say, I know you're going to be honest, even if I don't like the answer, you're going to tell it to me straight. And that's what I always did. And I still live by it.
I was going to say, I can absolutely see that about you.
But right. I try to say it with love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So fast forward to today. Tell us, what do you do and who do you help?
Okay. So I am a chartered professional accountant, which is a CPA for those who are aware of that, and a business finance coach. So what I do is I help entrepreneurs understand the finances within their business. And I really try to take an approach to make it sound a lot more fun, or for it to be a lot more fun than it sounds, because a lot of people are like, finances, I don't want to know about finances. Like, I'm getting by. It's all good. And that is really not the way you should be dealing with your finances. And I've got over 20 years of experience helping entrepreneurs and business owners, and I have seen it all. And I really feel that there's a need for financial literacy skills for all entrepreneurs.
Well, you know that I love how you bring fun into this because, you know, finances are not always considered fun. Dare I say that? So I love that you embrace this and find ways to make it fun for especially people like me that really need that.
But I mean, seriously, like, how can it not be fun? It's your money. You're managing your money. How is that not fun? You know, everybody loves money, right? And they think like, oh, if I'm rich, it's so fun and stuff like that. And if you could manage your money to make yourself a lot more money, how can that not be fun?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to like argue with you about it, but sometimes it doesn't feel fun, Melissa. Okay. It doesn't feel fun.
Okay. I will agree with that. But like, it's kind of like I'm trying to get you in a little different mindset
where you're
like,
no, I love it.
You know, let's be a little excited because this is about my money and I want to make more money. And I totally understand if you're not motivated by making a lot of money. But the sheer idea of knowing that you could be making more money with less effort if you were managing your business finances and your like numbers, would that appeal to you?
Sure. here's the thing about me is not that I'm not motivated to make a lot of money. Logically, yes, I would love to more money, the more people I can help, the more things I can do, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. But literally, like my motivator, like that I have no control over. I'm not motivated into action by the idea or results of money. I wish I could, that's just not where my motivator is. A lot of people do have that as a motivator. And I didn't even realize this about myself. A past boss kindly pointed it out to me while I was in a sales position. He's like, you're really not motivated by money, are you? And I was like, I don't know. I always thought I was. And it really gave me that opportunity to self-reflect, right? And to realize that. So some people are motivated by money. Some people aren't. I don't think we have any control over what actually motivates us. But I think that that's where finding that way into the money conversation of, well, what can motivate me to get this together or to have better habits around this or just to be more proactive or whatever that angle is, I think is essential, right? Because as business owners, we can't ignore this. And what I will say is knowing that we have that solid foundation, right, is going to help us be able to grow, not just logistically, but also I think the mindset of just knowing that we're prepared for that, right?
Absolutely. Because I mean, if you think about it and you're losing money in your business, that's sort of a total demotivator right there for your business to continue, right? Like as entrepreneurs, we always have these challenges coming at us almost on a daily basis, right? And if you're putting a business out into the world and you have no idea if it's profitable, you might want to take the time, and I'm not saying you specifically, I mean, people in general, we might want to take the time to make sure that we are making money, at the very least breaking even, so that we're on to something.
Absolutely. And I've had the experience of both at the end of the year going and being like, oh, wow, I didn't realize my expenses were that high. But also like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that like that program made that much money. And so not having that relationship with money where I was like having those habits and aware of it, I was surprised on both ends at different times.
Yeah. And both ends definitely have their pros and cons. Like, for example, I mean, it's great that, you know, if you have those years where you're like, wow, I made more money than I thought I would. But if you're not following your financial plan, then you're not planning for the taxes that you have to pay on that money that you made, right? So then what happens is if you spend the whole year not knowing what's going on in your business and you were lucky enough to make a big profit, you go get your tax return completed and you realize, oh, wow, I owe $20,000. Where am I going to get that? Because I didn't see that coming. You know, so if you've got a financial plan in place, a financial system to monitor all this stuff, you would know way ahead of time that you have this big tax bill coming and you would have the systems in place to ensure that you're saving that money so you can pay the bill. Because the thing about the IRS, they don't wait for anybody. So if you don't have that money, like, you know, they're going to start charging you interest if you don't meet that deadline. And, you know, you have no choice but to pay.
So true.
And it's an extra stress too for entrepreneurs, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you can try to say, oh, well, I don't know, maybe by keeping it at arm's length, it doesn't feel as stressful, but it absolutely does. Maybe you're not thinking about it every day, but it's still there. So really, like, yes, I could speak from personal experience that like getting systems in place for this, getting, you know, more up close and personal with it helped me feel more confident, more secure, right? When you feel more secure with things, even if it's not always what you expect, I think that puts you in a, just a better decision-making position.
Absolutely. And, you know, I never argue that, you know, it's like you could totally hire a bookkeeper, hire people to advise you on how to do your finances. Typically, that would be a professional accountant. You know, you're going to hire somebody to help you with your tax return. It's okay to check out of your business. Just because you've got other people helping you with your finances doesn't mean that you shouldn't know what's going on a day-to-day basis, right? And when you know your finances and you know your business numbers intimately, that allows you to make confident business decisions. So decisions that you're making, they're profitable. You know that, you know, you're going to be making money off this, whether, and you'll know how much. So if you're not motivated by money, but you're motivated by the idea of not going broke, you know, you can make sure that you are definitely not going broke. But, and if you are motivated by money, you can totally look at your numbers and see, okay, this is where I'm doing really well at. So I'm going to capitalize on this. And this is where, you know, things aren't going so great. So I can make improvements. Or, you know, like, let's say you're selling products and you realize, oh, my expenses are much higher than what I'm charging for my product. I think I need to raise my prices in order to be profitable. Or, you know, you think that you're not spending so much money on Facebook ads, but when you start tracking it, you realize, oh, I really blew the budget there. I should really, you know, not do that, because I've heard so many stories of entrepreneurs just completely blowing their budget on Facebook ads or, you know, just advertising means in general or anything. Like, you just really have to be cognizant of where your money's going in order to manage it well.
Absolutely. And I will say from personal experience, and this is something I've seen with clients too, if you're like me and you're not money motivated, even just like, let's not be motivated by not going broke, because I will say that one, that looks different at all stages. But I've had a client recently who thought her kind of set point, like, I need to make at least like 20K a month. But when we started looking at her goals and what she's doing, her comfort level really is 30K a month. And so sometimes we think, like, as our business grows, like, oh, I need to bring in, and maybe for you, it's 5,000 a month or 10,000 a month or whatever, wherever you are in your business, for those of you listening, as we grow, that number grows, right? And things change and how we're, who we're paying on our team changes or our lifestyle changes at home. And so, like, being motivated by not going broke, right? Like can keep us at that lower threshold, I think sometimes. Like that's been one of the mindset shifts that I don't know if I ever had that as my set point of not going broke, but I've definitely had to shift my mindset in terms of just where my goals were and what that set point is for me of like, okay, I'm not going to go below this.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking like making money, it should be like something that's celebrated, right? A lot of people, you know, when you're talking about money mindset, a lot of people feel like I can't make a lot of money because it, you know, makes me feel greedy or it makes me feel bad because, you know, for whatever reason, like maybe your parents don't make a lot of money or your spouse doesn't or whatever. But I really ask people to look at how they feel about money in general, because everybody has a money story, right? And chances are your earliest money memories are, you know, from your earliest memories, period. And I think the point I'm trying to make is that when you make a lot of money, that's not a bad thing, right? You know, you can do a lot of really good stuff with money. You know, you can donate, you can, you know, create different programs that help people. There's so much you can do when you've got money. And there's like one of my most favorite quotes is, if you heard of the book Millionaire, I think it's called Millionaire Mindset or something like that, but it's from Harv T. Eker. And he speaks about the fears of people having a lot of money. And, you know, a lot of people fear, what if I turn into a jerk if I, you know, have a lot of money and stuff. And like, I just love this quote. He's like, if you're a nice person before you get rich, you'll be a nice person after. If you're a jerk before you get rich, you're just going to turn into a rich jerk. You know, people who fear having money, it's like, no, there's just so much potential you can do with money. There's so much good in the world coming from that. So I really encourage entrepreneurs to think a little bigger than, you know, maybe limiting themselves to, you know, 10, 20, 30, whatever it is per month in revenue. You know, as your revenue grows, your expenses are going to grow as well, right? And a lot of people, well, a few of my clients have said to me, okay, I want to make, you know, let's just say $10,000 a month. And I'm like, have you considered, is that $10,000 that you want to keep in your bank account? Or is that $10,000 in revenue? They think it's revenue, right? But then when they understand that, you know, there's cost to all the sales that you make and you subtract the costs coming in from that revenue, like really what you're looking at is, you know, you want to keep $10,000 worth of profit for yourself, right? That's very different from revenue. And you need to plan accordingly. So when you create these goals for yourself, it's like you have to reverse engineer it to make sure that you're capturing everything into your financial plan to ensure that you will reach, you know, $10,000 worth of profit every month.
Okay, well, this is the perfect lead in then to be like, okay, tell us about this financial plan. What is this financial plan? What do we put in there? Because you're spot on with all of this. And I think we do need to be thinking bigger and not of, oh gosh, my first year in business, I actually think this was like something I would say in my marketing. it was like a firm stand. But I was very much like, oh, I don't want to make $1 million in my business. Like it was kind of like the antithesis of what everyone else online was saying. But I actually had a big change of heart with that after being in business for a little bit. And I realized that in my mind, I had attached this meaning to what having a seven-figure business looked like. And I thought of that as that I'd have to work a certain amount of hours and that it would be a lot of pressure or like a lot of responsibility, which probably is a lot of responsibility. As from where I was as this like baby business owner, I wasn't realizing, well, it's not just you. In fact, you can hire a lot more support and really surround yourself with a lot of smart people that can, you know, help you in these areas and take things off your plate. And you don't have to be working 80 hours a week to have a seven-figure business. In fact, making more money allows you to work less. And so that took me that first year of business to start seeing that differently. Yeah. I think that's important to, you know, as we kind of surround ourselves with different people who are maybe growing their businesses in different ways, we realize different opportunities are available. But that said, what is this financial, or if you want to respond to that, but I'm like, what does this financial plan look like?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about the financial plan in a minute. But the first thing I want to respond to is, you know, people often talk about multiple six-figure, seven-figure businesses and stuff. And I really want people to be aware that, you know, you can make seven figures in your revenue for the year, but it doesn't mean that your business is going to be profitable. And you would be surprised at how many businesses I have seen over the years that are multi-million dollar businesses and they go bankrupt. And the reason they go bankrupt is because of financial mismanagement. And in fact, it's 87% of businesses go bankrupt each and every year because of financial mismanagement. So that is definitely, you know, something that people, well, entrepreneurs need to be aware of, right? Because I mean, that's a vested interest. You don't want to go bankrupt. You want to keep your business for a long term. You got to pay attention to the numbers. So then what I do is one of the steps I teach clients in my programs is creating this financial plan. And this is essential. I mean, this is like the heart of your finances. So if you have another thing I often say is, you know, a goal without a plan is just a wish. So if you've just got a goal and you're like, oh, I want to make, you know, six figures this year, you know, going back to what I said before, is that before or after expenses? Is that before or after taxes? Are you paying yourself? Are you keeping, you know, like you really have to create an idea, like a goal that you want to get to. And then to put that goal into a plan. And that's what I really help clients with, is breaking down that plan. So typically what you do is you reverse engineer. So if you're somebody who wants to make $100,000 in a year, and that's, you know, in profit, you're going to plan that out in reverse, right? So what do I need to achieve $100,000 of profit in a year? So you're going to break it down month by month, you know, from January to December. Let's just say you've decided to create this for simplicity's sake at the beginning of the year, right? And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, every sale, there's an expense tied to it. So you're going to have like, you know, cell phone bills, maybe office space if you're renting. You've got, you know, your internet expenses. You've got your website maintenance, you know, this, that, the other. There's tons of expenses that go into maintaining your business. You need to list all those out. You need to understand, you know, how much it's costing you. If you've got coaching, if you've got a coach that you pay for, if you've got office supplies, like anything, travel, you know, anything. Eventually
software,
the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All these recurring SaaS subscriptions.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not cheap to run a business. So you list all those expenses and you list it out month by month. And don't forget about those expenses that come up maybe once a year. You plan those out too. And, you know, what you're going to do is you're going to determine, okay, so if I'm making it, or if I'm spending $5,000 a month to maintain my business and keep it going, how much revenue do I need to bring in to make sure that I'm getting $10,000 worth of profit or whatever it is per month? So that's how you break it down. And, you know, once you come up with your full year plan, it's fantastic because then you're like, I see now how or what it takes to achieve that goal. So you've got it mapped out for the year. And then the other step is the key is monitoring your success against each month, right? So you've like, let's say, you planned on bringing in $15,000 of revenue with $5,000 of expenses, you know, to have $10,000 of profit, right? And that was your goal for January. So it's the end of January. You're going to measure what you planned versus what actually happened. So that if you fell short of your revenue goals, you know that, you know, you need to hustle the next month to make up for it. Or if there's some sort of problem there, you've identified it and you tweak it. You know, like when you get this feedback, that's when you know how you can correct things before they become huge money leaks, you know, like, cause if you're looking at it in December, you're like, wow, if I had known that back in January, look at all the money I would have saved, or look at all the heartache I would have saved myself, or stress, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, you're going to monitor your expenses as well. So if you've planned that you were, you know, paying $5,000 in expenses, but it actually turned out to be seven or eight, you'll know it. And then you'll know like, whoa, I need to pull back on some expenses and I need to save money if I want to make that profit that I planned for. So the only way you're going to know what's going on is by checking in. And there's a lot of benefit to checking in. It's your financial health. It's your financial well-being. This is your business. And, you know, ideally you've created this business to support yourself and you also have to pay yourself. You know, everybody needs a living salary. So being on top of all that is super important.
Yes. So I love how you broke that down of to look at it, you know, over the course of the year, project that out, what our expenses are. What would you say for someone who is switching their business model? So I know a lot of people in our GoToGal community maybe have a service-based business and they have a certain amount of clients who are paying them to do done-for-you work or one-on-one work, but they're starting to maybe behind the scenes work on launching a course. And so they know that coming up and it's like, okay, well, that could be this big maybe launch in the middle of the year. And maybe they're hoping to, you know, eventually switch that business model when maybe the revenue and even some of these expenses may not be predictable. I guess that's yes. Like with the speed of online business, a lot of times our growth can go exponentially, right? 1 month to the next or not, or the other way, right? Yeah. 1 month to the next, but also so can expenses, right? Oh, I'm going to have this launch. And then before you know it, we're hiring, you know, designers and copywriters and ad strategists and all this stuff. And so are there adjustments to this plan that can help account for some of these more variable?
Absolutely. By planning out a year in advance, it's just a plan and it's definitely adaptable. So if, you know, 6 months into it or whatever, you've decided that you're going to introduce a new revenue stream, you just have to make sure that you create a plan for that revenue stream as well. So, you know, and launches are expensive. I'm glad you brought that up too, because quite often I hear entrepreneurs talking about their seven-figure launch success. And, you know, I think to myself, being the accountant that I am, okay, well, that seven figures means nothing to me. Tell me how much you made. You know, tell me how much you had to spend to make, you know, $1 million on your launch. And the reality of it is like you said, there's copywriting, there's Facebook ads, there's tons of expenses that go into a launch. And it really is not uncommon. And it sounds shocking, but I swear it's not uncommon to hear that a seven-figure launch netted nothing or maybe $10,000. You know, it's a lot of work to put yourself out there and to get those sales in. And sometimes it's a break even, you know, so people have to be, and that's before you've paid yourself. So people have to be really aware of controlling the costs in their launch. You can't go all, you know, crazy thinking that you can keep up with, you know, some big entrepreneur, like, I don't know, let's say Amy Porterfield or something, right? Because she attracts huge audiences. She's going to sell a lot of courses. So if you're starting out and you think that you have to present at that level of a launch, you're going to be in for a big surprise. Like you want to control your costs, because I'm sure her launches cost like thousands and thousands of dollars. So I mean, she's probably got a very well-oiled machine and she's probably very profitable. But when you're starting out, you don't know what to expect. Like you said, you know, it could either be a hit or it could be a miss.
So true. Well, and it seems like a lot of those entrepreneurs that have these big launches once a year and seven-figure launches have something on the back end that they're upselling to that I'm sure is much more profitable, right? So it's almost like their front-end offer is this course that's a couple $1,000s, but on the back end, they're upselling into a mastermind or some type of experience like that, that can be, you know, $10,000, $20,000 or even $30,000. So it's kind of like the invisible funnel that people don't see from the outside.
So true.
That especially when you factor in affiliates. It's interesting this year, Amy Porterfield and Marie Forleo, who typically launch with affiliates, both of them did not launch their signature offers with affiliates this year.
Is that right?
That's right. I know. So that is interesting.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I mean, both of them always, like, it's like the whole internet is talking about their launches. And so this year they, not that the whole internet wasn't, but it wasn't like that email, like from,
yeah,
you know, 12
true.
People that they're already subscribed to. So I haven't heard either one of them talk about this, but just as an observer in the space, I thought that was interesting. Also as someone who, one of my signature offers, the one Farnoosh and I have for our new podcasters, Paced Podcast, we do partner with affiliates for, and it makes sense for us to do that. But absolutely, it cuts into our profitability, but it also ensures that we're getting leads in from people that have audiences that are really aligned, and those leads convert really high because they're referrals, essentially, right?
Exactly. So, you know, they've been referred by someone they trust already. Which is fantastic.
So it's, you know, but it's interesting to, everyone has to make their own decision. So it's interesting of like, oh, okay, this is such a trend in the industry to do affiliates. And I'm curious if kind of the pendulum is going to swing a different way because it cuts into profitability.
Yeah. I wonder about that because, you know, is it profitability or is it because, I don't know, I could take that conversation in a totally different direction and I won't. So because I'm like, is it a trust factor? That's another thing that kind of comes to my mind when you hear the big names that have decided not to use affiliates anymore. Given the current climate, the cultural climate that we're dealing with lately, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's a decision about, you know, trying to go solo on that.
Maybe. But I feel like those decisions were made before maybe the climate started to change.
Yeah, you're right.
The climate's probably been changing for a while. Yeah. Right? I mean, the industry has changed a lot over the last year. So that could be part of it. But I also think about it as their audiences are probably quite large. They are legitimately quite large at this point in time. So launching to their existing audience, they probably know their numbers of what they could get. Where with Furnished and I, we're not as actively building an audience yet of people who want to start podcasts. Like that's not our focus.
Yeah, I see what you mean now.
So partnering with affiliates is like, okay, that way we're selling to our existing audiences, but more of our traffic for that is going to come from our partners that can, you know, send people from, they have a small portion of their audience that's interested in this. Okay, great. They're going to refer them to us. So that's where it makes sense for us. But I can see if you already have, you know, Amy probably has a million people on her email list. Like literally.
God. Yeah. Probably.
She probably has a million. A couple of years ago, it was like 600 something. So I'm sure it's a million people now. So if you already have a million people on your email list,
maybe
you just launched to your email list, right?
So but, true.
I don't know.
I know this is why I love talking to you because I've said it to you before and I'll say it on air. You are brilliant. I love the way you think.
Well, I think you're brilliant in different ways. And I'm like, you are brilliant. Like, tell me what's all this stuff. So, okay. So we got a little bit off track, but not really. Like in terms with these launches, a lot of times people talk about expenses in terms of the marketing, mm-hmm. right? Of, oh, okay. I spent this much in ads or I hired a copywriter or a designer to build out these sales pages. But there's also operation, like you have to like deliver the program. Like nobody really talks about that part of it, which I find really fascinating. And something that, especially because my business is probably a little bit more complex because I have a partnership with Farnoosh, right? With running different programs. And then I have different components of my own business. And so some of, I have a team member who is on my team, but she's also doing work for Farnoosh and I. So that is invoiced separately and we keep that separate. And so I can see her hours separately divided between those things, right? But mm-hmm. when it comes to my own business, it's a little bit muddier of where team members are spending time in different things, right? And mm-hmm. so to really look at the profitability of a quote unquote launch is also to look at what is our operational expenses to deliver this program? Because that also ties into what the expense of the launch is, right? How does that fit into the plan?
I mean, if I'm understanding you correctly, it sounds to me like you need to time track. So if you're interested to know, you know, how much time your team is working on different components of a launch or just different tasks in general, you know, they've got time tracking software where it's like, okay, they're going to start a timer when they start working on a launch and stop the timer when they, you know, and then at the end of, I don't know, let's say a week or something, or even a day, you just collect the data. And you bring that into the expense part of your launch. Like whatever time they spent working on the launch, you've calculated that for time and you can quantify it through, you know, charging an hourly rate. And then boom, you've got the cost of having your team work on that launch. And those are important factors to track too, because a lot of the times that would escape people's thoughts. You know, they would just be focusing on the direct costs. But when you're talking about, you know, indirect costs, and I don't want to get overly confusing, but I mean, that is an indirect cost, but they still have to be costed into what that project is that you're doing, whether it's a launch or whatever. But yeah, you have to factor in these times. And also if they're working on the course rollout as well, you have to factor that in because that is a cost for the program that you've just launched. So in the end, you may find like, wow, I put all this effort, time, and money into a launch and I don't think it's profitable. And then you can work on ways to increase the profitability.
Exactly. Well, and that's where I think it's this, okay, the launch is one thing, but then we're running the program, right? So what are those recurring expenses of running the program? How many hours are my team members putting into supporting our students or our clients in that program. And so what does that all look like? And I think that also helps in terms of figuring out what you really need to be pricing those programs at.
Yeah.
Right. As well as like, okay, maybe this program isn't profitable. Maybe I shouldn't be offering this program. Maybe it looks like there's a lot of money is coming in from that, but at the end of the day, not so much, right? Like I know that this definitely happened to me in the past where it was like, oh, this seems like a really great idea. But then at the end of the program, realizing, wow, when you start looking at how much my team is invested in my own time. So is that something we should be looking at of like how much of our own time goes into it? Because I don't really think of that as a line item, but it really is.
It really is. Even though you're not directly paying yourself, you should really be factoring in because your time is money in a sense, right? Like it's currency. And see, I'm such a money nerd. What I do is like I have four or five different offers and I track them all separately and then roll them up into one big pink spreadsheet so I can see how profitable my business as a whole and then how profitable each individual offer is. So, and then if I've got like, let's say my CRM system, which would cover all of my offers, I just, you know, divide that cost by five and plunk it into each project that or offer that I have, right? So this is like management accounting 101, and this is what I love to talk about with entrepreneurs too, because when you start seeing how profitable each offer is, and you think maybe your course launch is the most profitable because it brings in the most revenue at that one time of year or whatever, but you realize when you're looking at all projects that you're working on, that's totally not what's happening. And your most profitable program could be your one-on-one or your group program or whatever. Then you can start putting your energy towards the most profitable offer that you have and really promote that instead of, you know, riding that, you know, hamster wheel of, you know, trying to get more money in the door, trying to get more money. And then it's just going out as quickly as it's coming in. You know, focus on the things that are really lucrative. And then you're working smarter and you're working less. I'm not trying to suggest that, you know, like one-on-one is the best way. I'm just using that as an example.
No, a lot of my friends, peers, mentors at my level don't do one-on-one. And it's kind of this like badge of honor, like, oh, I don't do one-on-one anymore. I say very lovingly of them. But here's the thing. I love one-on-one and it is the most profitable, right? And so if I hated it, if I resented my clients for that time on my calendar, absolutely, I would stop it. But I have a handful of clients. They're all a joy to work with. And I get so much fulfillment out of that one-on-one work. Mm-hmm. It is not energetically draining for me at the level which I'm, you know, working with it. Mm-hmm. And it's massively profitable. Absolutely. Yeah. And so it makes sense right now. Does it make sense forever? Probably not. But for now, that is something I've decided to keep because of that. Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's profitable, not scalable.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But this year, it'll likely be a six-figure revenue stream on its own in my business, and costs associated with it are very minimal.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so when you look at that versus other revenue streams in my business and how much cost is associated with that, it's dramatically different. So yes, it's not scalable to, you know, infinitely, but yeah, it certainly makes sense to...
Yeah. And I have a client who came to the realization, you know, she's launched her program, I think 3 times. And she came to me last week and she said, I can't do this anymore. Like, I hate it. For her, it's the energy just gets sucked out of her and it's just too hard on her system. So is it a payoff to keep launching? No, not really. Just look at different options.
So true. Okay. So let's talk cash flow, because I know this is something you always want to talk about. I'm just using you. But first of all, it seems obvious, but I know that there's nuance to this. So just explain to us, when you say cash flow, what are you talking about?
So really what typically happens with entrepreneurs who are not managing their cash flow well is that they've got their bank balance. They check in to see how they're doing by their bank balance, right? They're like, okay, I've got this amount of money in my account, I must be doing well, so I'm going to spend it. And that's not the way to manage cash flow, right? Because what happens is you have to time the cash that's coming in your account and out of your account, because you're always going to have business expenses that you have to pay. And if you're not keeping track of when they're due, you could come into the problem of not having the cash to cover it. So part of, you know, having a really wholesome, fulsome accounting system or financial management system is to ensure that your cash is being managed properly. And typically what that entails is keeping tabs, 6 to 8 weeks ahead of time, and you're documenting, when clients are paying, what bills are due, and on what day, because there tends to be sometimes an overlap where, okay, client A isn't paying until after invoice D is due, and you've got that overlap, and you've got this cash shortage. And it's really important to keep your suppliers happy. So whether your supplier is like your phone bill or, your internet or whatever, or something more serious where it's like you're a product-based business and you're relying on your suppliers to deliver. Like, it's all about having really good, well-managed relationships in business. And cash management is a huge part of it. And unfortunately, cash management is the main reason why businesses fail due to mismanagement of finances. Cash dries up, so does your business.
It does. Okay. So we could probably talk about this all day, but just the two things that pop into my head about this are, one, what about the business that is either just not consistent by inherent nature of the business, or maybe they're pivoting or whatever it is. Maybe they're just going through a hard time and they're like, I don't have any idea how much money I'm making the next couple of months, yeah. Right? Or it's like, okay, I know this month's much is coming in, but I'm hopeful or planning on making a lot more because of this or that. How do you manage cash flow in those situations? And the thing that comes into my mind, so I'm just going to ask it, is when is it okay to maybe use credit as a bridge for those scenarios too?
Credit as a bridge is going to be helpful when you absolutely have no cash to meet your commitments. But when you're talking about, managing your cash flows throughout the year during the high times and low times, this is part of the planning process where I always get people to set a salary for themselves, a minimum salary that they need to pay themselves so that they can live, and meet their personal finance expectations. So then what you're doing is, on the good times, you're putting that cash in a reserve. So you're not spending it. So it'll be there for the bad times, and it'll help you through the harder times when you're pivoting, or when you're, even if you want to take a summer off or whatever the case may be, you've got that cash in the company so it can carry you through.
So smart. Okay. And then the opposite of that is sometimes there's a big influx of cash and it can almost be intimidating, or it can be tempting to just be like, okay, I'm going to give myself a big old bonus.
For me, it's tempting. And this is really where the discipline comes in. You have to discipline yourself. You have to say, okay, there are going to be rainy days ahead. I need to keep a certain amount of cash on hand to get me through at least 6 months of expenses, because, you're pivoting, or you don't like pandemics. We've all learned a major financial lesson is having that cash reserve will help you get through things such as pandemics. So it's really important to have cash planning in that sense as well.
Yes. Okay. You mentioned paying ourselves. Do you have a rule of thumb for how much, or like what percentage we should be paying ourselves?
It's part of the planning process. So typically, if you require $5,000 a month to meet, your mortgage and your food and all your personal expenses just to keep your family going, whatever, then in your business, you need to clear at minimum $5,000 a month. So it's going to depend on each person, and what their financial needs are. And then some people really want to have more of a cushion, or they want to pay themselves more than strictly what the minimum needs are to get by. So this is where tax planning comes in really handy. And I'm not a tax accountant, but I do understand the tax strategies. And there are so many ways that you can set up your business so that you're making really smart decisions and saving money from tax savings and stuff. So I highly recommend people work with tax accountants to come up with really good strategies for that.
Such a good tip. Okay. I wish I could just pick your brain all day on this stuff, but I know sure we need to wrap up. All right. I am serious though. You're so brilliant, and I love your assessment of everything. And I know that this is questions that come up a lot And so I really appreciate you sharing so candidly all of these things. And also, full disclosure, we ran out of time the first time we recorded this. So I had to ask you back to be like, wait, I had more questions.
Because we have too much fun together.
So, yes, we got too chatty. Well, and we got some interruptions too. Okay, so that said, how can we stay in touch with you?
I would love for you to check out my podcast, Think Like a CFO. There's tons of valuable free advice on that podcast. And you can find me at my website at melissahoustoncpa.com.
Amazing. And you have a great freebie too. That's a good resource. What is the link?
When you get to melissahoustoncpa.com, right on the homepage, you can download a free guide called The 5-Step Roadmap to Biz Finance Freedom. And that is a great resource to help you and guide you into creating a business that is completely understandable for your finances and totally profitable. Who doesn't love more money?
I love it. All right. Thank you so, so much, Melissa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can I just say thank you so much for listening? I don't think I say it enough, but I love that you are here. If you enjoyed today's episode, or if you've been getting value from this podcast, would you do me a quick favor? Head on over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. When you leave a rating and review, it basically tells iTunes that they need to spread the word and tell more people about this podcast. And I am on a mission to get the word out. I'm so grateful for your support. We want to make sure to shout you out too. So if you do leave a rating review, keep your eyes and ears open. We will be either shouting out on the podcast or on Instagram stories.